Total Tuscany Podcast, number 20. Ciao, and welcome to another edition of the Total Tuscany Podcast. I'm Travis Justice from TotalTuscany.com, joined by my fellow traveling partner, Mr. Pat Campagna. What's up, Pat?
Ciao, Travis. I'm doing well today. How about you?
You know, couldn't be better. I know some people are probably wondering, boy, you guys haven't been around for a while. We haven't had a podcast update, but we need to take a holiday every now and then, don't we? I mean, we you know, step back and go, okay, let's relax and then get back to talking Tuscany as we head into the fall.
Recharge the batteries, and I think we're ready to go.
Of course, you can always follow Total Tuscany on the social media channels, including Twitter, Facebook, and this podcast is available on iTunes as well as Stitcher. Now, you've seen the movie Under the Tuscan Sun, right, Pat?
Two or three times.
Yeah. And it's been an inspiration for many, many people, not just us, but a lot of people have looked at the Francis Mays story and said, wow, you were inspired. You gave up everything and went and purchased a villa in Tuscany. And it's a dream for some. It's a reality for others.
And what captured our attention in that movie was not just the adventure, but the change in lifestyle, right, from the fast-paced American city-dwelling lifestyle to what we've discovered in Tuscany. And I think we might have, I know we found somebody that has taken that opportunity.
Well, the Francis Mays story is the one that everybody knows, but how about somebody different? Somebody who had events in their lives affect them in a way that they said, you know what? We have to just do what our heart is telling us. Take that leap of faith. And today, Pat and I want to introduce you to Stuart Smith. He's from the UK. He visited Tuscany about 10 years ago. He married his wife, Helen, in Siena. And today, they live in northern Tuscany and are starting to live their dream. Stuart, I think all of us have seen the movie Under the Tuscan Sun, where you have this revelation of, wow, Tuscany is great. I'm gonna give up everything and move to Tuscany. You have actually lived that dream. What made you and your wife decide to pursue that dream?
Oh, good question. Not necessarily a short answer. Initially, when my wife and I first met, it was the first place we came on holiday together. We had a choice of either the lakes, being Lake Garda, Lake Como, or Tuscany. My wife being a huge fan of Room with a View, also another famous movie about Tuscany. You can guess which one. So we came here and instantly fell in love with the place. It's not hard to do. You know, it's beautiful. It looks exactly like all the postcards, all the scenery on the movies. And we just couldn't get enough of the place.
Now, how long ago was this? How long ago was this?
So this was 10 years ago now, I think. Mm-hmm. That was our first holiday. And we haven't been here every year since. But on all the visits we have been, we've been to slightly different pockets, slightly different corners of Tuscany to try and find the bit we loved that the best. Mm-hmm. And along the way, we had the conversation about, wouldn't it be nice if and when we got married to do it in Tuscany, complete pipe dream stuff. And lo and behold, 2 years ago, that's what we did in Siena. So it was kind of a natural thing, really, for us. It just progressed and we talked about things. Initially, we planned to have a holiday home over here as a second home, a little bolt hole we could come to every summer. And I say the older we get, I say I'm 39, my wife's just, she would say, the wrong side of 40. Mm-hmm. And the more we found out what was important to us, what we enjoyed doing, whether that was growing our vegetables at home, getting out and hiking in the countryside, the more we realized the life in Tuscany could be the ideal solution for us. So to get off the treadmill and just to give it a go. And that's kind of how it happened. The actual move in the last 12 months kind of happened in a blink of an eye. We toyed with the idea of viewing some properties, we ended up having a coffee with a guy that had been on not BBC, it was Channel 4 in the UK about 12 years ago, on a documentary about moving his family over here. So we ended up having a coffee with him. He now makes a living finding expats' houses. And before we knew it last year, we'd had a holiday in June, and we were back over in August looking at houses. it was a snowball rolling down a hill at that point.
You sound like you have the same obsession Travis and I do.
Yeah, you guys obviously love it. And it's not hard to see why. You've only got to come here once, I think.
You're exactly right about coming there once. And when you're making that decision, was it a group decision, or did your wife look at you in the eyes, or did you look at her in the eyes and say, let's just do this?
Let's go.
Yeah, I think it was cut. We talked about it enough to know that it would suit both of us, and it was something we both would love to do. But I think the idea of it stayed quite a way off for a little while. And then a couple of years ago, my dad passed away, which kind of gave me a bit of a kick to get out there and do stuff. You know, I'm getting older, my wife's getting older, and we were aware that we could talk about this for another 10 years. And my dad, had he had his way, would have loved to have moved to Canada, but his illness got the better of him, and it just, that his opportunity just disappeared. So that was my push, really. And then the day we got back from holiday last June, Helen had a call from her mom letting her know that she had a rare form of terminal cancer. So that was Helen's kick. And that was all we needed, really. That was it. After that phone call, we put the call in and put the wheels in motion to make the move.
So you took these two tragedies in your family, and how did you get that wheel in motion? What was it that you did as to put your first foot into Tuscany?
Initially, it was trying to get a grasp on the cost of living out here, really, for us. I had transferable skills being a plasterer, so I wasn't necessarily worried about myself. But still, I had no idea what the going salary was for that kind of work out here. So we needed to work out what everything was going to cost us, as much as the internet would let us know, to live over here a fairly comfortable life. Then work out what we could try and earn, and just make sure the numbers were, as much as we could, the numbers would add up closely enough.
Because, you know, a lot of people are going to listen to this podcast, and they're going to say, oh, sure, you bought a place over there, you're growing your own vegetables, you're bringing people in, you must be extremely wealthy. Are you extremely wealthy, or is this just a total leap of faith, and here we go?
I actually, through a bad day, I was running a graphic design business that I built up from the age of 19. I built my business up kind of organically, really. My main customer was the biggest company in the world at that point, who actually went bump on me a number of years ago. So I ended up, I was filing for bankruptcy 5 years ago. So I'm only just coming out of the back of bankruptcy. So me personally, completely penniless other than the monthly salary. My wife comes from a very normal background. She's had a good education and has a well-paid job at the point prior to leaving. But yeah, wealthy? No. We can spell wealthy, but that's about as close as it gets.
So
normal, and we sorry.
No, so you decide to make this investment.
Yeah.
You know, when you start doing the homework, I guess people are gonna wonder. I wonder, how much does it cost you to get started?
Good question. So, I mean, we're still pulling in all the final bills. Nothing moves quickly over here in Italy. And although we completed the deal on the house 2 months ago now, we're still waiting for the final contract. The house here cost us, let me see, it was about 250,000 euros. On top of that, there are obviously fees, which maybe about another 20,000 euros. And that's what we've put into it. It was generally basically a straight swap from our house in England. We lived near Oxford in England, and we had a very average three-bedroomed, mid-terraced family home, and that was it. And that we sold for £250,000. So we could come over here, cover the cost of the house and the legal fees, and it just worked perfectly for us. It was a straight swap.
And did I understand correctly, Stuart, you have some land, some acres to the property?
Yeah, well, we looked at six or seven different houses when we came over, all different prospects. The big idea was to get as self-sufficient as possible, and to work hard at living rather than, you're not going to get rich over here working. It's a case of making a lifestyle for yourself and working hard at that. So we wanted land that would provide us enough space to eventually grow all of our own vegetable requirements, and also some rental income potential, so that in many years to come, when we're old and grey, it will provide us a form of pension. So those were our two main requirements, and ideally also with a bit of woodland to provide our heating. So the house has a large wood burner, which provides the heating for the house at the moment. So that was our short list. Outside of that, and it was luxury, but and that's what we went viewing the houses with, and this one was head and shoulders above anything else we saw.
So we have 12
acres here.
Okay, 12 acres?
Yeah.
So you take
I don't know what a British acre is compared to a US acre, but I don't think it's too dissimilar.
so you and your wife take the leap of faith. And you moved to Tuscany. What has been, even in the short time, what has been the biggest surprise that you didn't anticipate or you didn't think was going to happen in that short time?
Do you know, it's the silly things, I think. The language barrier makes things a little tricky. We can get by perfectly as tourists. So you put us in a bar or a restaurant or a supermarket, there's not a problem. But living here is a different thing. And when you need to go to the builder's merchants to ask for some screws and some bags of sand, it becomes a really, really steep learning curve. And the biggest surprise, I think, which we didn't anticipate, is how comfortable we become in the UK with branding. So we knew what shops in the UK sold what, where to get them from. They were all well signed. And just shopping for things was easy. We hadn't anticipated the difficulty of just trying to acquire a car battery, for example, this weekend that we needed because our car wouldn't start. Places aren't signed. When they are signed, it's in Italian. And different people sell different things differently over here. So it's you can spend 2 or 3 hours driving around just trying to find the simplest of items. So it can make tasks quite difficult when you're trying to get jobs done. But with each job done, we then learned where to get X, Y, Z. And slowly we're building up this local knowledge, but we hadn't anticipated that at all.
So are you and Helen spending some time each day learning the language, or are you focused on that at all?
We're trying to. I'm fortunate in that I'm the one getting out there and having to do most of the legwork. So I'm much more immersed in it than Helen. Helen was lucky enough to negotiate a bit of a step down with her previous job. So she used to manage the company, and she was also the editor of a magazine. She now just edits the magazine remotely, which is a great security blanket for us coming over here, meaning we had one income for sure. But that does mean 9 to 5, she's sat in what we call the office, completely immersed in the English language. So she finds it a bit of a struggle. spare hours here and there, we use Duolingo and bits and pieces. And we've even taken to watching the Scrubs box sets in Italian with English subtitles just to try and pick up little bits and pieces. It all helps, and it's going to be a slow process, but we're learning so much quicker for being here.
Now, we haven't even asked you, and I can't believe we haven't asked you this, is where exactly are you located in the Tuscany region?
So it depends how well you know Tuscany. We're in the north of Tuscany. So we're in the Pistoia province, which is we're equidistant between Pisa and Florence.
Okay.
And just slightly north of them. So we're an hour's drive from either of those cities.
We know that area well.
You do. Okay. It's lovely. I mean, we're just in the foothills of the mountains on the road up towards the ski resort in Tuscany. So we're 3 miles away from the flatter lands and the supermarkets. But if you turn the other way out of the driveway, you wind your way up some beautiful mountain roads.
So you have 12 acres. You want to be self-sufficient with your produce, and do you want to sell that produce? So what are you looking to grow on your land? What are you looking to sell on your land, and how do you become self-sufficient? Is it great for a vineyard? Is it great for produce? What is your land best suited for?
It's very hilly, our land. It's because we're on a mountainside, obviously, so that most of the property is terraced, which has its challenges. We didn't initially had dreams of selling produce as part of the whole romantic view of what we were going to do, but there is so much of it and it grows so well out here. I think in terms of vegetables, you grow what you need to stick in the freezer for winter, and that is all you can expect to do. So we plan to get all our fruit, veg, cabbages, kales, tomatoes, aubergines, peppers, all the usual Tuscan suspects. And hopefully, I think that's going to take us a year or two to get completely self-sufficient with that. So that's where we are with the fruit and veg. We're also planning to get bees so that we can get honey, and that we hope to sell because honey's very popular over here. Geese will be our next project. Hopefully in the next 2 or 3 weeks we'll have geese, which will provide us with eggs. And we're planning to make handmade soaps using lavenders, rosemaries, things that grow naturally around us. And just one or two other bits and pieces, handmade pin boards made from Italian corks. You know, just little bits and pieces just to help pay for the shopping bills.
I know there's a lot more expats going to Italy and going to Tuscany. How are you received by the locals and the Italians?
Amazingly well. I've never known such friendly people, really, except for the chap we've come up against in the immigration office, who I'm destined to meet again next week. But I can understand why he has gripes. Other than that, the people are just so friendly and so helpful. You show a little bit of willing, just trying the Italian, and they generally have a little grasp on English, and between you can get most things understood with an index finger as well. You can point at things, but the Italians, we haven't met a bad one, and they will go out of their way to help you out.
So, Stuart, I heard a dish break in the background, I think, didn't
I think there's a party going on while I'm doing this interview.
I was hoping not Helen wasn't invited. Throwing something at you.
Yeah, they've already started drinking the vino.
Of course.
Tell me, you've kind of described what some of the difficulties and unexpected difficulties. Mm-hmm. What mm-hmm. are some of the positive surprises that you've had, the things that you weren't necessarily expecting that turned out to be better than what you might have thought?
The weather has turned out even better than we'd imagined. The friendliness of the people exceeded our expectations hugely, which has made a lot of tasks easy to accomplish. We hadn't foreseen quite the benefits, and almost on a kind of spiritual level, if I can use that word, of having the outside time that we have because of the weather over here. It's really quite special. And we make time to sit down at the end of every working day on our patio and soak up the views for an hour or two. And it's, yeah, we feel blessed every day at the moment. It's a wonderful thing. The bureaucracy is a bit of a pain, but I think largely because we don't understand the language. But yeah, the friendliness of the people, the food, and the fact that you can live so cheaply should you want to over here has been a real positive for us.
You know, I think we've noticed that even then when we've taken holiday over there, is that the hardest part for us about Tuscany, the most expensive part, is the airplane trip. But once we get there, we find that we can live and tour fairly cheaply. So, I mean, for us, the biggest part of the most expensive part is getting there.
Yeah, indeed. And the same for us during the summer months, obviously not compared to a flight from the States, but we can still pay £200 a head to hop over the 2-hour flight from Pisa to London. But once you're here, you can eat expensively and you can drink very expensively if that's what you want to do and your budget allows. We have all the super Tuscan wines and there are Michelin-starred restaurants. But generally, the Italian people like simple, well-cooked, homemade food, and that is all they're interested in. So all of the restaurants around here will offer you a two-course fixed lunch, including coffee, a carafe of wine, and you pay 10 euros a head at most across the board. So you really can do Italy cheaply.
You know, social media is actually amazing because that's really how I found you. I believe you started following us on Twitter. I followed you back.
And
all of a sudden this thing popped up. Numero 182 is following you. So I followed you. Then I went to your website. And that is your website, numero182.com. What's the significance behind numero 182?
There is significance. Initially, we were so busy with other jobs, the mechanics of getting out here, filling in forms, that it has to be a quick decision. And simply, 182 is the house number on the street. So our house is number 182.
Okay.
So it's simple as that. There's no pretense. There's no lofty ideas behind it. And the idea was born, really.
Now, you mentioned rental properties, and if you go to numero 182, you can stay at your acreage. I have to ask, are you running your house like a bed and breakfast, or is there a separate apartment or guest house on the property?
It's completely separate apartments. The former cantina, like the storage, it's more glamorous than it sounds. The old storage, the working area of the farm where all the machinery would have been many, many years ago. Because I think the house is about 300 years old. That's been renovated, and it's now a completely self-contained holiday rental. So it's a double bedroom, a nice kitchen, and a shower room with its own patio at the front. And the situation of the house means that we can give guests complete privacy if that's what they want, or we're just upstairs if somebody wants. I think, like I said to you, we try and offer a little bit of a concierge service for people that want it. So if somebody wants a lift to the train station to Florence, if they want some meals one evening, you know, whatever, we're here on hand for advice and extra services.
And how far would the nearest train station be, Stuart?
The train station nearest to us is in a town called Pescia. That's spelled P-E-S-C-I. Which is it's a famous flour producing town. We have the second largest flour market in Europe. So all the flours from the whole Pistoia region is cut flowers, olive trees. They all end up in this city. So our nearest train station is next to the flour market, which is 3 miles from our house. So although the house looks from the website and the images looks very remote, you can walk to the nearest bus stop in 15 minutes, and you can be in Pescia in 10 minutes on the bus.
Have you found, just in the short time, a huge interest in people staying at numero 182? And is that, and what is the market like for apartment living and villa rental?
Good question, because we're only just dipping our toe in the water, and we arrived a little late for it, really, because people plan their holidays many months in advance. And we didn't get into the property until May. So we had our first guests leave us last week after 2 weeks. They had a fantastic time. We've taken another couple of bookings for later on, early autumn. We, as well as directly through our website, we advertise on a popular website called holidaylettings.co.uk. And our page is certainly getting a lot of hits, but I can only assume these are from people planning next year's holiday, really. So we're all set for a big push for marketing and social media late this summer and early autumn, so that we can have a busy and full summer next year.
How much does it cost to stay at your place?
So our place, for you're testing my memory, is around £330 for the week in the height of summer. So that would translate, I guess, to you guys, must be about 1.6. So about $530 for the week.
Is that for a 5-day or a 7-day stay?
7-day.
All right, we're coming.
We'll be there next week, Stuart. And about 500 of our... We'll be there next week with about 500 listeners, so...
I'll have to get some more beds sorted.
I mean, that's obviously reasonably priced, and we are big proponents of apartment and villa living, because when you look at what a hotel would cost you, even a 3-star hotel in Florence or even Siena, going the apartment and villa route is definitely the way to go if you're a tourist.
Indeed. And the beauty of it is, you guys all know well, the moment you cross the threshold into any of the cities where the numbers of tourists increases, so does the price of everything, 2 or 3 times what you would pay where we live here. So we're only an hour on the train from Florence or Pisa, or half an hour to Lucca. So you can go and do your sightseeing, and then you can come back and you can live cheaply, and you can sit and look at the views at the end of the day. And you got the best of both worlds, we feel. And that was how we always liked to holiday in Tuscany. So that's why we've ended up where we are.
Stuart, I'm wondering, you not only left Britain, you left, you were a city dweller, and then you moved into the country. Would you ever have considered moving out into an acreage in Britain somewhere?
Well, the last 8 or 9 years, my wife and I have been living in a little market town on the Thames, which only had a population of about 20,000. So both my wife and I had left cities quite a few years back, and we found that the little market town suited us much better than any city life ever did. Mm-hmm. It's twofold, really, I guess. We love Tuscany, so I guess that makes it threefold. There's also the price of property in the UK. There's no way we could have afforded to buy what we have here in the UK. Not in a million years. It would have been 3-4 times the price back in the UK. And we don't have the weather. There's far too much rain back in the UK.
How many of your friends and family members said, you're absolutely crazy?
Crazy. I think most of them have been quite proud, actually. I don't think we've had many discouraging, or none that I can remember, remarks. A few friends have asked us questions which we know means they've been thinking about us and making sure we've thought everything through thoroughly, because they don't want to see us fall flat on our face and for the dream to turn into a nightmare. But other than that, we've had nothing but encouragement. Although everybody's been sad to see us go, everybody's behind us all the way, which has been really nice.
I would imagine a number of them are looking forward to visiting you in Tuscany.
Well, indeed, we have one pair of friends with their young daughter outside on the patio as we speak. My mom was out a couple of weeks ago. We have some friends booked in for Christmas, Helen's parents in October, and another pair of friends late October. So yeah, they're starting to arrive in their droves. Well, and the beauty of that is that, we get to spend quality time with people, whereas back in the UK, everybody's so busy, you catch up for an evening, and you're gone again. You don't see people for 3 or 4 months. people visiting us here now, we get a week together and we get some proper quality time to catch up, which we would never have done back in the UK.
It's the simple things, isn't it? Pace of life.
Yeah. Pace of life over here, which I should have mentioned earlier, is just, while it can be frustrating, once you adapt to it and understand it, it's really beautiful. And they take time out here for family and for meals and for the children, and they seem to have their priorities just about right from where we're sitting.
Stuart, a fascinating story. Numero 182 is the website. We want to follow your journey. We'd love to have you back on. I think it's a remarkable thing that you're doing. I think you're doing something that a lot of people have thought about but have never had the guts to cross that line and take that leap of faith. And I think your story will be inspirational for many people.
Thank you, guys. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, and I hope we can do a little catch-up podcast at some point in the future and just see how these dreams are panning out.
Stuart, thank you so much. We wish you the best of luck.
Our pleasure. Thanks, guys. Take care.
What do you think, Pat? Could you do it? Could you give up everything right now and move to Tuscany?
It's a great story, you know, and I want to think that I could. It's stories like Stuart and Helen's that give me the reason to think we could do it.
I think that I think we always dream that one day we're going to live in Tuscany. You have 3 children, I have 4, so I don't think I'm quite ready to make that leap yet. But I think Stuart is an inspiration that says, you know what, if you plan it, if you think things through, you can make things happen. And I encourage you to visit his website, numero 182. You'll see pictures of his fantastic property. And as you plan your next trip to Tuscany, make numero 182 a place you want to stay, because there are so many different parts of Tuscany and so many different landscapes where he's situated right now, and how close he is to the train station and close to Lucca, close to Pisa, close to Florence, makes you accessible to a lot of things.
Well, and it gives you a totally different perspective on Tuscany than just an hour south. I think it's well worth the trip, and it's a beautiful area up there.
I think Stuart is right. His is a story we want to follow. We'll keep in touch with him probably every 3 months or so, just to see how he's doing, because it's a journey and it's not going to be an easy one.
And I'm glad we caught them at the very beginning.
Yes, because you can just tell by his attitude it's going to be a success story and one that we can all live vicariously through him. For Pat Campagna, I'm Travis Justice. Make sure to like Total Tuscany on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and please tell people you know who love Tuscany about the Total Tuscany podcast, which you can find on iTunes as well as Stitcher. Until next time, remember, live Tuscany.